We come to this time this morning. What does it say on the front of the bulletin? It says soul stories. Okay, so what we're going to do this morning is we're taking the time just to have our team that headed over to West Africa in Sierra Leone and Liberia over the past few weeks to share about how God worked and share some stories. As we went, the six of us, along with Joe Abu, who pastors down in Philadelphia, and met up with Bishop Pessima, who leads our group of churches over in Sierra Leone. And we traveled a lot of miles and experienced a whole lot of stuff. And so we went sent by you, and as representatives of our church and our church family as a whole went, and we wanted to take this morning and to celebrate and to thank God for his faithfulness, his goodness, and all that he did and all that was accomplished through that. And so it was a real joy. Just before the team comes up, because they're going to be the ones who are doing really all the talking this morning, most of it is just to tell stories. As we went, Isaiah 52 verse 8 was our a verse that was sort of like a theme verse for us, and it says this, verse 7, I mean, how beautiful upon the mountains are the feet of him who brings good news, who publishes peace, who brings good news of happiness, who publishes salvation, who says to Zion, your God reigns. And we know, like, back in Romans, where is this at? It says the same thing, this idea of how then, and the importance of us going and telling, says this, how then will they call on him in whom they have not believed, and how are they to believe in him whom they have never heard, and how are they to hear without someone preaching, and how are they to preach unless there is sent? As it is written, how beautiful are the feet of those who preach the good news. And so for all of us, for every single one of us, we've been working through Acts, and it's been all about that we are a sent people, sent to go and tell of the faithfulness and goodness of Jesus Christ and the hope that we have in the gospel. And so that's for all of us. This is just one way that we, as a church family, went and did that and got to accomplish that as we went to West Africa. If you don't know where Sierra Leone is, here's a map of Africa. And here in the colored dots on it is where Sierra Leone and Liberia are, and there's a closer up view of it. Just two little countries there on the coast of the Atlantic, and we traveled well over a day to get there. And so I want to invite the team to come on up, and they have come prepared. I'm going to let them tell the story of our time, and nice, Linda. I like it. And so come on up here, guys. We can come on up top and you can share. But along the way, there are so many stories, and it's a hard thing. We were there, gone for 11 days was the trip, and there's so many stories and experiences that we had along the way. And I just want a picture with you. And so it's like, how do you capture it all, and how do you come around it? And so picked a few different areas that I thought sort of tried to cover it all and to split it up amongst the team. And so we're going to start with Amy Jo, and this was the order in the email. So that's how you get first. And so I'm just going to let you guys talk and tell the story about what we did I'm going to come to the side. Because we landed in Monrovia, Liberia, and we spent a day there, visited some churches and an orphanage kind of place, and then traveled up some long roads into Sierra Leone and visited all kinds of churches and schools and hospitals and got out in the community and all kinds of things like that. And that's what I'm just going to have you guys tell the story of. So Amy Jo, you can go for it. And what I loved about Amy Jo as she went was she's probably the most prepared in just understanding the history of Sierra Leone. And I loved that just in going. And so as she went, I know that she could appreciate all the more the healing and the work that God had done in that place. So go ahead, Amy Jo.
Hello, good morning. The history of Liberia and Sierra Leone has always interested me. They went through a brutal civil war. Liberia's civil war was from 89 to 97. Then they had a second war from 99 to 2003. The war crossed into Sierra Leone in 1991 and lasted until 2003 as well. The stats cite more than 200,000 people were killed and more than half a million actually were brutally injured, some amputated. I'm sorry, this affects me a lot. The Sierra Leone War is also infamous for the use of child soldiers. Nearly half of the government army and a quarter, or the half of the rebel army and a quarter of the government army used child soldiers. They were age 8 to 14. These children were drugged, they were captured, they were made to do brutal atrocities to their own people. And if they didn't comply, the atrocities were done to them and they were killed. They kind of had no choice of this. So when I went there, I was really concerned of what I would see. My daughter said, "Oh, can I go with you?" I wasn't sure I wanted her to see this. But when I got there, although we saw things from the war, we saw destroyed buildings, I saw some amputees, what we were greeted with was warmth and joy and love and laughter and exuberant praise. I was personally greeted by a man when we were on our way to the airport to come home. Both his arms were amputated above the wrist. He was lucky because a lot of the amputees were up closer to the shoulder, which gives you no ability to do anything with your arms. He was holding material that he was hoping that I would buy, and he approached me and asked me for the sale. When I declined, he was truly kind. He said, "Thank you. We hope you come back to our country one day." And he said, "God bless you." His eyes were not the eyes of trying to make a sale. His eyes were truly happy. I asked pastors there how the healing happened. And one of the things that they did, the government and pastors and other church leaders went around the country after the war and begged the people to forgive their children when they come back. And they did. So we saw God's forgiveness. The people, we know some of them, we see them. One of the settlements of the war was to give the rebels motorbikes, but these motorbikes now give them away to make money. So that part was really emotional for me. We also saw buildings which haven't been fixed since the war. When the rebels would come village to village, they would rip the roofs off, sell the metal, burn the wood, and just randomly destroy anything inside the buildings, anything of value. It was just rogue behavior. Some of the buildings that we were in, one of the buildings is destined, I believe, to be a UBC office, was inhabited by the rebels during the war. We saw a classroom at a school that when we were in and watching the kids do their lessons, scribbled up on the wall was RUF, was the abbreviation for the Revolutionary United Front, which was the rebels. So it's living history. But what we saw was God's forgiveness, God's love, and truly a peace that only God can give. The other thing I wanted to talk about was a school we found in Liberia, which ended up to be an orphanage. I don't think any of us knew that at the time. So we're visiting a school, and when we got there, the children and the small staff, we met in their little chapel, and a girl stood up, and she was the choir leader, and the choir sang, and she would sing, and then she was really good. She would tell them to quiet, then she would tell them to come up. She was amazing. But this girl now has reached the end of her tenure there. They can only take children up to about 13. And the headmistress there is concerned about her welfare. Where is she going to go? She has no family. So she's praying for resources to get this girl hopefully into a boarding school where she continue to be working on her education and working on her faith as well. The school was called the Sarah Memorial Christian Community. The ages range there from babies to about 12 or 13. The school started there by chance. This is where we saw God as well. During the war, there was an attack in a village. This lady saw, as she was running, she saw two babies laying with dead bodies. She scooped them up, and she ran. She kept them. She tried to find their families. She could not, so she took care of them. And now it became known that this lady brings in orphans, and more people started dropping off children to her place, and she took care of all of them. The bishop of UBC in Liberia helped her to find a new location since they were just growing and growing. And we met her, and she was a marvelous woman, thoroughly committed to these children and taking care of them. Her daughter works there. She cooks. She asked us to pray for her, for God's leading, for God's wisdom, for her own health and strength, for all those children. We did give, thanks to your generosity, we were able to give that school supplies, stuffed animals, toothbrushes. They were so very grateful. So I just want to thank you for your generosity to that. So those are just some of the ways that God worked. Thank you.
Thanks, Amy Jo. Let's go over to Doug, and he can share about what we did with churches and schools and sort of thing.
All right. Like Pastor Derek shared, a big part of this trip was just to go around to visit these churches, to be able to encourage them. As always, we're the ones that end up probably getting more encouragement from them as they're just so welcoming and so generous. But to kind of go around and meet these different churches and pastors and see what the needs are, obviously to pray with them, but to truly bring that message back to you. A little different than other trips that we've gone on where we kind of focus maybe in one church or one family and get to build like a week-long relationship. This was a little bit more of like a whirlwind tour. I think I have down that we visited about 12 churches, 10 schools, and one hospital. And the unique part of this trip was as we were traveling, we got to spend a lot of time in the cars. So I think someone else is going to share about the roadways. They were very difficult, but what that did was enable us to just spend time building relationships with the driver. This is one of the drivers from the one car. And the way it worked out, we ended up kind of picking cars and kind of sticking with that then as the week went on. But Pastor Derek and I spent a lot of time with Bishop Pessima, John Pessima. He spoke here before. And then also Reverend Joe Abu, who pastors a church in America. And so we got to just hear the stories of the country, hear the stories of the churches. It took us one stretch of roadway, was like 17 miles, took us over 2 hours to go. And it wasn't because of traffic, it was because of craters the size of cars, mud, water, and this guy traveled, this is not him, but the guy, Bishop Pessima, travels that all the time. So we got to hear his story of how he just has a heart for his pastors, for the churches throughout the nation, and he's just constantly traveling and encouraging. Sierra Leone has 53 United Brethren in Christ churches and about 62 recognized schools. Dave's going to elaborate a little bit more on the schools, but it was just such a unique thing. Almost everywhere we went, a school and a church went hand in hand. I think I was picturing maybe more of like little lambs, which I don't want to underestimate what we do here, but you know, 30 kids in this class. Every one of these schools had over 500 kids. Just throughout the week, we probably talked to well over 2,000 kids. And this is all funded and ran by the United Brethren in Christ over there. And again, Bishop Pessima, he's I was teasing them because we were talking about how a lot of the kids, you know, they have hand-me-down stuff from America, like book bags and stuff like that. And, of course, they love the superheroes, the Marvel stuff. And we were talking about Superman, and this guy is truly a Superman. Like, he's in love with God, and he's in love with people, and he is just on the go constantly. And he had a grasp of all these 53 churches, the schools, the hospital. He doesn't run it all. He doesn't micromanage it all. He's got a team, and we got to meet part of the team there. We met Reverend Justin Marva, Reverend Peter Kainwoe, and Emmanuel Pharma. These are three assistants to the bishop, and so part of what I to bring to you guys is the needs. Obviously, you can imagine the needs are great. Every one of those churches, every one of those schools, the needs are enormous. Like we said, we took four trunks of stuff over there and divided it by as many schools as we could and given them little pieces of paper and crayons and pencils. I mean, they have nothing, but they work with what they have. And so I'm going to read down just a real quick list here. Again, I apologize. It's just going to be names to you guys. But the one church we stopped at in Liberia, the Genesis Temple, they literally were building, they had like a wooden church with thatch walls, and they're building a new church literally around that church. And so they go piece by piece. These people have nothing, and yet they give to the church to build and to continue to reach people. The church in Morbatown Bow, they're building a multi-purpose building. It was amazing. It kind of looked like our facility where they had the church and then a multi-purpose building and then a school right there. Candytown UBC, this building was a church, a school, and the bishop would like to turn it into his office, like a regional office, so that he has a place like kind of in the middle. Unique thing about this building was it was taken over by rebels, so as often is the case, what Satan intends for evil, God's able to turn for good. And so out of that building, there's a school, there's a church, and they're looking to do some work to make it into an office. We stopped at a place called Grace UBC. They need a parsonage. Another one in Mogoboemo. They're building another multi-purpose building. The church we stopped at in Danville, which has a historic cemetery for UBC missionaries. They kind of, from what they told, is where the mission kind of started there, and then it moved to Matru. They shared with us they kind of feel abandoned, not only from the rest of the world, but even from within their country there. So they shared their needs. They would love to have like I said, the mission kind of started there, and now Matru has a hospital. They have a need for that as well, as they're so far from hospitals. So they were talking about like a traveling clinic. The one church that Pastor Derek preached at, they have a preschool. Like I said, we have 62 recognized schools over there. This wasn't even a recognized school, but I think they had probably close to 50 kids at this preschool. And these teachers don't get paid nothing. And they're just all volunteering their time. So the main ways that we can come around, the needs that they shared, number one, Bibles. In some of these other countries, there's the language barrier. For the most part, they can speak and read English. So this is easy, church. We can provide Bibles. And they have it there where we can purchase some. We don't have to ship them over there. So we need to be doing that in the weeks to come. I'm sure we'll talk about how we can do that. But they need Bibles, so let's do that. They still go around with the Jesus film. They literally travel around. It's a very high Muslim population area, so they show Jesus. They get to see on film who this God we worship looks like. And so the Jesus film is effective, but they obviously need new equipment, and they need, they're driving around in these rough terrains, so they need motorcycles and cars and all that kind of stuff. And then also, as the bishop shared, the job that what he's doing is just trying to encourage the pastors. The pastors need, we need to be able to partner with them to equip them. So the three guys that I had named, they're all looking to go to grad school. I mean, obviously it's a little different over there, but they shared that that's what it's called, grad school. And so just any kind of ongoing training that we can help maybe with funding or just encouraging them. The thing was, as we met at all these churches, like they have nothing. We have everything. we're so spoiled here. We're so comfortable. They didn't beg us for money. They didn't do it. They really didn't ask for money at all. Every time that we'd meet with them and meet with the staff and meet with the pastors, the number one thing they asked about is just to remember them, to keep them in prayer. We can do that as well, church. So we can get you these names. We can get you pictures. I'm sure we can set up something that we can keep being faithful in prayer. And obviously, like I said, some financial needs for Bibles as well. Just one final thing to give you an idea. The bishop shared with us, hopefully he wouldn't mind me sharing this. I assume he's probably a little bit well off. He's the bishop of a denomination in their country. I think he's well off, and his wife is a teacher who gets paid. And as he shared, you know, there's different stages of that. But between the two of them, they live off of $250 a month. Most of the people live off less than a dollar a day. So these teachers, these pastors, they're giving all this back for their congregations, and they just need encouragement. They need our prayers. If we can support them financially, they need that as well. And the main thing that I got in all these areas, and all these churches, and all these schools is the field is ripe. Like, evangelism is right there. Most of the schools, because they're good schools, have Muslim kids going there. Obviously, they're right on facility with the churches, so to be able to help bring them along and just share the gospel with them, and they do that in their schools, unlike here in America. So they're doing a great work, and it would be great if we could partner with them and just keep them in our prayers and support them as well. Thanks for sending us.
Good morning. Before I'm tasked with talking about schools and evangelism in the schools. But before I start, as a congregation, I want you to know we are truly blessed with a pastor that has a gift of relationship building and a calling to share the gospel, and just feel secure that in his leadership with us over there that was done. Secondly, to piggyback what Amy Jo was sharing, our driver was impacted by the revolution, and I found it interesting. As we would travel, he would point out how the revolution impacted the country. And him and his wife, and he only had one child at the time. The rebels came to his house, and he and his wife and child went out the back and spent a month in the jungle. And ended up in Freetown. So I just piggyback with what Amy Jo was saying, and I found that interesting to hear first hand experience. Some facts about Sierra Leone and Liberia with the education system. They have three levels of schools. They have K to six, high school, and college. To progress, you have to take a test to pass before you move on to the next one. And the test costs money. There are two types of schools. As Doug was sharing, there's schools that are affiliated with the church, and then there's also government schools. The population is very heavily Muslim, but the neat thing is part of their curriculum is the gospel. So you have Muslim children in the classrooms hearing the gospel. And as Doug was sharing, it's right to share the gospel. We found that we were very well received, because we would ask, you know, how many people here are Muslim and how many people are Christian. And when we asked, it was probably 50-50. Supplies are always in need. The classroom is very heavily, here you look at a typical classroom, 25 to 30. It wasn't uncommon, you know, they would start at 50. And we were in the one classroom, and there's this was elementary. I take that back, it was high school, it was at Centennial. And the one girl was sitting on a chair with three legs. I mean, the things that they would do to get the education was amazing. Doug shared with you, the teachers don't get paid. And that's just mind-boggling to me that, you know, here are these people that are giving back for the good of the young people so that they, A, hear the gospel, and B, improve their status and learn. The high school that we stayed at was at, we stayed at Mitru 5 days while we were there, the city of Mitru. And the high school has, is called Centennial. And Wednesday morning, they have got a chapel. And to paint a picture for what the chapel looked like, it was probably a room about this size. I started and counted the rows, and I got about a third of the way back, and there was 100 kids. I counted 100 children, high school children. And so estimate 600 children were in this chapel. It was packed. The windows were open, you know, because of the climate. Kids were outside, you know, 2-3 to a window, peeking in. They had, I'm assuming, were seniors, if you will, down the center aisle for class, you know, controlling the situation. And they were just worshiping Christ. And it wasn't, imagine 600 people in here singing at the top of their lungs praise songs. That's what the experience was. And I was tasked with sharing my testimony to these 600 people. And when I do that, I ask for a prayer for words to say. I ask that I speak slowly and distinctly. And I'm telling myself statistically in a class or in a, yeah, a group of 600 people, somebody, and you, that's the picture of me sharing my testimony, somebody is at a point in their life where they can benefit from my testimony, or they're searching for something more in life. And I just praise God for the opportunity to share that testimony with them, and I just trust that you know, our job is to share the testimony. His job is to convict the heart. And I did my part. Other aspects of the schools that I enjoyed that I would share with the group when we were done, you can imagine 50 to 100 kids in a classroom, and we come in, and we start talking to them, and then we take pictures, and the kids get excited. And they wanted to touch us. Now, these are the elementary kids that I'm talking about. They wanted to touch us. And I appreciated the classroom management of the children, or the teachers saying, sit down, behave, and the kids doing it. I also appreciated the respect that they showed us when we entered the classroom. They stood in unison. I can't remember what they said, but they said, welcome, hi, how you doing, this type of thing. And then they would sit down. And then we would stand like this and introduce ourselves and give them words of encouragement. They appreciated getting their picture taken. I took my big camera, and I'm standing up there, and pictures were everywhere. Everybody with their cell phones, and you know. But I had my big camera, and I would take it, and I'd turn around, and I'd show them the picture. And they just lit up, all the way from little to tall. They enjoyed that. We stayed at a guest house called the Promised Land, and there was a building behind the Promised Land that had a makeshift chalkboard on it, and a high school student was out there doing his homework every night on the chalkboard. And I'm going to tell you, I'm out there and I'm trying to do the problem. He was doing math, and he was better than I was. We were in another circumstance that I appreciated. We were in a classroom, probably fourth or fifth grade, and it was English on the board. And Derek asked the teacher, can somebody read that? And the teacher put that out there, can somebody read that? And he had a volunteer. It was a young boy. And he walked over to the teacher, and the teacher had a pointer. you know, stick, pointer. And the boy went over and he just started going, and started reading the lesson. And what I took from that was he was imitating the, you know, that where did he learn that from, which was the teacher. So he's going, and you could see what the how the teacher was teaching the class through the actions of the young boy. So I appreciated that. There was a church that we went to on Saturday, and nobody, of course, Saturday school's out, but the head mistress there told us that the exam to go from high school, or from sixth to high school, the kids came in on Saturday and were preparing for this exam. And what impressed me was this teacher, the government didn't want them to do this. And the teacher met both Muslim and Christian parents. She met with them individually and said, you know, we're not going to listen to that. We're going to, for the benefit of the children, come in and study. And so everybody was on the same page. And just, it was a joy just to see that happen. So on a personal note and wrapping up, I just want to praise God for the opportunity that I could share this with my wife on the mission trip. That is an experience that we as a family are very thankful and grateful for.
Who's next?
I'm You're next, Linda. Yeah. These two are a trip. You know, and you can even just watch it up here. Dave's doing his thing, and Lynn's like, here, you get this right. It was awesome the whole time just to see their
Hello?
Example in your marriage and your love for each other. An example. It's awesome.
Hello, my name is Linda. This is my husband, Dave.
That's how she did it. That's how she did it. Everywhere we went, and this is my husband, Dave. It's like she was worried they were going to, like, take him or something like that. It's like... We
I didn't
up
want
at the,
the
guest house, and she's like, this is my husband.
I didn't want the African women to go after him, so I let them know right up front he was mine. Wow, we could
it,
all then. Talk for hours about our trip, so I'm going to try to make mine pretty short, I hope. We toured the hospital in Matru, and when you think of...
Sorry, one before I get started.
Wow, look at this. You know, this doesn't happen.
This whole time you hear people talk about, like Doug shared, when you do something like this, they minister us rather than us minister them, and the fact that they didn't have a lot of material things over there. You know, you talked about salary. Our first church we went to, you're seeing the appearance of Linda. This is something that truly touched us. They came out, and it typically was we'd show up, they'd come out and introduce themselves, we'd go in and meet with the leaders of the church, we'd sing, pray, and then go out and take pictures. And two things that really impressed me was the next day, Linda met this woman, and she said, I really love your dress. And the next day, her son shows up at our place, and guess what? She gave her the dress off her back. So that touched us. And also, that same church, the first day we were, that was the first one we were there, it was Doug and Nicole's wedding anniversary. And they brought Doug up and prayed over him for his marriage. And that touched us.
And the amazing thing, it fits. I mean, how could that but be the grace of God that the dress would actually fit? So that was pretty neat. And she gave out of her heart. And I didn't want to take the dress because I thought it meant a lot to her. This dress probably cost $20,000 of their money, which is only $20, but $20 to them is a lot of money. So she gave me the dress, and I was very, very thankful. I didn't want to take it, and Joe Abu said that she was so excited about it that that would be offensive if I didn't take it. So, and we got a goat too. I think Doug or Dave forgot to mention that the church in Danville, the one that felt abandoned, because that's where it all started. We really need to pray for that church in Danville that will stop feeling abandoned and possibly get mobile clinic there. They really need a clinic there. So, but they gave us a goat. Okay. maybe Derek can share more about that. I'm going to speak about the hospital at Matru. When you think of a hospital, you think of a sterile, pristine, and very clean area. And this was not true of the hospital at Matru, but they try very, very hard to teach the people about infection and bacteria to make sure they wash their hands and so forth. And even though you might not like hospital food in America, how about none at all? Because in Africa and foreign countries, your family has to bring the food into you. They do not serve food in the hospital. So you better be on good terms with your family. And most of the people in the Matru community were a very tight-knit, family-oriented community, so they would take care of each other. We toured the hospital. We found the beds were old. The mattresses were old. They only had one working ultrasound machine, which really kind of upset me. And they had one x-ray machine. We toured the maternity ward and the other ward, and these are the areas that need attention. But praise God, let's look at the positive side, that they had on the grounds of the hospital, they had a missionary house, the Yoders, and two small children, and there was a doctor helping from the Netherlands. And I want to tell you about the head surgeon. He was born in Sierra Leone, went to college there, and then he studied in the Netherlands. I need a tissue. He studied in the Netherlands, and then he went to Australia, and then he came back to Sierra Leone. And thank you. He told us of the infant and childbearing fatalities and how high they were. We had several numbers we didn't quite know. The one was an average of 5 a day, but that would be an average because June and July are the high death rate months. So we weren't sure if that was a true statistic. And he's been there 3 years, and there have been none since he's been there. So we praise God for that. That was the positive. Another positive, we are impressed by the water system there for purification in the hospital. That was an expensive system, but it gives them their solar water, which was pretty nice. The other positive is we toured the solar system. They have solar panels there with the generator room that houses batteries. They sell electric that they don't use to the community, which helps pay them for the system. And it's a positive that it's a positive that the hospital is there. It's not perfect, but it's there. And at this point, it's what they have and what they need. We need to pray for this hospital, which is supported by the United Brethren Church, that it will continue to have a positive impact on the community.
Hello, everybody. It's nice to be here. It's nice to be back at Devonshire. Okay, I guess as you've been able to see through some of the slides, one of them was of the roads. And it's kind of ironic to see that you've got gullies going down the roads. You have cars coming at you one way, one coming at you the other way. You have people with foods and different fruits and foods on their heads. And then you have motorcycles going beep, 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 beep. And it's like total chaos. You know what? And there's a town called Bombay. And as Doug said when we were traveling, he goes, wow, the roads are really Bombay. And, you know, you do that for 8 hours, and after a while, you're just like, you're shaking all over the place, you know. But to move on from the roads, I would really like to take time out to talk about our driver, Sule Carbo. He was not only our driver, he was a great protector. He kept us very safe. None of us ever felt in danger at all over there. And that is actually Sule over there with Doug. He became our friend. He was a great tour guide. But let's go with this. He's Muslim. So I sat in the back seat. So really, it was us three in the back seat. I sort of sat in the middle. And I don't quite know. I sort of think I said to myself, you know what? Life in Africa. I'm in New Jersey or Pennsylvania. Life is the same. Life is life. Maybe circumstances are different. But I think God sort of got a hold of me somewhere along the way, and I leaned forward and just started talking with Sule as he's driving. I said a few things, maybe some things that I started to say was to Sule was, you know, Sule, I sin every day. I said, you do too. You know, maybe my approach so far, maybe I'm making some people uncomfortable in the car. You know what? But you know what? It was okay for him. Actually, we're the same age, so our life situations are probably somewhat along the same level. But I said, you know what, Sule? I said, Jesus died on the cross for us, and he saved us. He forgives us our sins. I said, you know what? I said, we need to get to heaven. I said, I need to see my husband. He had known that my husband died and my father died. I said, I need to see my husband again. I said, I need to see my father in heaven. I said, I need to see my mother in heaven. I said, you need to do the same. I said, but from earth to heaven, that's a long way. I said, but I need to get there. I said, you need to get there too. I said, I'm sure there's other things I said along the way. Okay, now we need to fast forward the day. Okay, there's other blah, 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 blah.
This was a 12-hour trip, so.
Yeah, it's a long way. I don't have all this time because Derek's going to cut me out. You're all going to leave. Okay, I know. And everybody else is probably going, No, but anyway. So then, all right, that night, I continued to talk with Sule a little bit. And he says to me, you know, he says, we have many teams that come here, mission teams that come here. You've got construction, we have engineer. And I think this is the most important point, he says to me. He says, nobody ever bothered to talk to me. Nobody ever cared enough to invite me to heaven. Wow, isn't that powerful? Boy, did that touch me. You know, then I continue, we have to keep moving the story along. So other things that come out are, you know what, I said, you know what, we have church services. Would you come? Derek's talking. He's going to preach. I'll be there. Doug, he's going to talk. Would you come? I'll be there. I'll come. I said, awesome. Good. You know what? Some of the other points are, he wants to convert. Don't worry. I want to leave Muslim. I want to come to Christianity. You know what? With the help of Pastor Derek, Doug, all of us, you know what? Here you go. You know, I guess in Muslim, they don't pray for you. I guess, I really don't know. But we do. That touched him so much. His life is so changed. But here was a man that put action forward. And the things that he has to say And there's much more to his story, like I said. But here's a man that met face to face with God, but with the help of everybody. And the bishop, Passama, that's going to reach out to him, and him going to church now. I ask you all to pray for Sule Cardbo. Okay, yeah, okay, here's one of his other things. This was the thing that he said the next day, all right? He says, Tina, I want to talk to you. I have something I want to tell you. I said, what? He says, I have to go to Pastor Derek because I have to know what he needs or what he thinks of this idea. I want to change my name from Sule to Solomon in the Bible. I'm going to let you know when it happens. Pastor Derek says, I like it. You know, I want you, I'm so grateful for this whole team because I definitely had to enlist. You know, I told Soleil, I said, you know what? I said, I have to tell everybody. I said, because this is definitely out of my realm. I never thought I could ever get this thing going. You know, and I need help. He said, okay. You know, but you know, I'm so grateful for this whole team. I'm so grateful for Bishop Passama, for Joe Abu. And this driver is actually Joe Abu's best friend that he always hires. But what a lovely person. Thank you so much. And I leave you with this last thought. Do we need missionary work in these countries? For people, I think I proved my point. Absolutely. And Soleil is a great example of just to say, nobody cared enough to invite me to heaven.
Awesome. Thanks, Tina and the team for sharing. There is so much that can be said. But yeah, before we went, I know, like, just talking with our small group that night is the night before we took off. It was just like, man, I just want this to be worth it. I just want to make sure it's worth it. And this was one of the highlights. There were so many highlights, so many opportunities where the gospel was presented and shared. And I know, like, throughout it all, that Jesus changes lives, and he gives new life, and he heals, and he restores. And so many ways we saw that. And here in this story with Sule, it's just one example of it, and it was worth it. And so thank you for sending us. There's plenty more that can be said, but we're out of time, really. And so wanted to show you and give you a glimpse and made a little slideshow just for you to enjoy, and then we'll wrap it up. So go ahead, Timmy.